It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said that patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have 3 square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us. Each of you are treasured, valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this moment. Live with intention. And thank you to this team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, Jen, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. I so appreciate each and every one of you. And producer Steve, it's been quite a year. Tomorrow is New Year's Eve and then 2022, and we've got a lot of work. But reflecting back on the year, it's been a great year.
Well, you know, because of what we've all been facing, I put the 2 years kind of back to back like they're welded together. 2020, 2021, they look too much alike.
And there does look like anticipation that there are PBIs who would like to make 2022 look like that as well. But we are at a defining moment, I think, in American history and actually in world history. So it's going to be a super interesting year.
Yeah. What did we say in another recent show? I need to get my cynicism under control and really think that because of the awakening that I think is happening, I see it. You have seen it for a long time, that this could be a good year.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be remarkable. And we need to continue to stay focused on our creator, the divine provider, all the different names that the founders used for him in the Declaration of Independence. But great show planned for you today. Be sure and check out our website, though, Kim Munson, that's MONSON.com. Our recaps and podcasts of our past shows are there. We're on about a 48-hour/2-business-day time frame to get that podcast and recap where we want it, and then that is posted, and then that is there. You can share it. You can re-listen to it. So be sure and check that out. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get first look at our upcoming guest, as well as our most recent op-eds and our most recent podcast. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who contribute to keep our independent voice out there. We are independent, and we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And be sure and check out America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. That broadcasts on KLZ 560 AM, KLZ 100.7 FM. It streams on the KLZ website, and use the KLZ app. That is just super convenient. But the show will broadcast this Sunday, 3 to 4 p.m. And a gentleman who I would like to say he's my friend. I've never met him. He lives in Belgium. And Martin King, he's written a number of books about World War II. And in fact, over the last 30 years, he's taken many World War II veterans, both Americans and Germans, to the battlefields where they fought. And so very interesting guy. His latest book is Triage, A History of America's Frontline Medics from Concord to COVID-19 by Martin King and Michael Collins. And that will be our interview this Sunday at 3 p.m. Very, very interesting. So check that out. And then Reggie Carr. You know him. I'm a Uniter. His show broadcasts on Friday mornings, 9 to 10 a.m., so be sure and check that out as well. And these shows come to you because of great partners. Another one of those is Hooters Restaurants, and they have 5 locations, and that is Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. It's a big football time right now, and they have football specials for dine-in, all kinds of great specials to go. They're all different. And then a party pack, if you're having a bunch of friends over and want to feed a bunch of people, they make it convenient and affordable to do that as well. So check out my website. All my sponsors, highly recommend each and every one of them. Click on the Hooters tab and you will get all of their specials. But it is a big football week. We've been so busy, Steve. I really haven't been paying that much attention to football.
Well, college, you know, is right where it always has been. The NFL, oh my gosh, I saw some NFL paid advertising the other weekend, and talk about woke. Oh my gosh! And you know, it irritates me because I want to say, "Gee, NFL, are you not content with the market share or the audience share that you've already lost? The the stadiums that are down 30-40% in attendance, and you keep right on plugging away." But hey,
they're going to figure it out one of these days. But once those fans are gone, it will be very difficult to get them back. It's like customers. Once you lose a customer, it takes more time, money, and energy to try to get them back. And people don't like to sit there when they want to just look at, you know, watch football, watch, you know, the competitiveness, all that. They don't want this preaching to them how bad they are. They just don't need that, particularly after the 2 years that we've gone through. And so it will be very difficult for them to get that market share back once that is lost, Producer Steve.
Well, it's not even worth talking about here and now in our valuable airtime, but it sure is annoying.
It is. But what a great show we have planned for you for our 12:30, our December 30th broadcast. And thank you to the Harris family for their sponsorship of this show. This is our show that we are doing with regarding the American Revolutionary War, finishing this up with our friend Ben Martin, patriotic historian, graduate of West Point, former Army Ranger, and we're going to wrap up this particular year. I can't believe it, but George Washington is really the man of the hour regarding the Revolutionary War, and I'm sure the stories are going to be amazing. But this is a pretty interesting quote from George Washington. And you know him. He was our American soldier, general of the Continental Army, statesman, founding father, was our first president, born in 1732, died in 1799. And boy, he knew it here, Steve.
When you say I know him, I know of him. You, on the other hand, you did know him. So go ahead.
Oh, here we go. He says, "However, political parties may now and then answer popular ends. They are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion."
Not to mention usurp for themselves lots of money, too.
Right, and power. But again, our founding fathers, they have been demonized. And they certainly look, if people only looked at our faults, each and every one of our faults, and we all have them, there would be plenty to look at. But you've got to look at the whole package. And the founding fathers, as imperfect as they were, they put in place this very close to perfect idea that all men are created equal, with rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And they were willing to put their lives on the line for that. And hence the American Revolutionary War. And so this is going to be a fascinating show. It always is, Producer Steve, when we have Ben Martin on.
Well, there are storytellers out there. Then there's Ben Martin. And, I mean, he's not telling a story, but he tells it in such a way that your imagination is just a half a step behind him the whole time.
I know it. And it just brings all of these people alive. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Ben Martin. Thank you to the Harris family for their support of this show. We'll be right back.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trembling.
sampling out the vintage ware.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family. Just so appreciate their partnership on this. And this has been such a great series that we have done with patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point graduate, Ben Martin. This has been America's Revolutionary War, and I have learned so much. It's hard to believe that we are at the end of the year now. Ben Martin, this is our December 30th broadcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kim. I'm happy to be here, and we're happy to be able to talk about the end of the Revolutionary War. But you're right, it did go pretty fast here. So I'd like, last time when we left, Kim, we had finished the Guilford Courthouse battle, which was another pyrrhic victory for Cornwallis and his men. He actually kept the field because Greene left the field, but he left the field and he inflicted more than 30% casualties on Cornwallis's forces, and Cornwallis didn't have any way to get more forces at the time, so it was pretty devastating.
And Ben, for people that don't know what a Pyrrhic victory is, explain that to them, please.
Well, a Pyrrhic victory is a victory that you have, but you lose so much in accomplishing it that it really doesn't turn out to be a victory. And what the British Parliament said about Guilford Courthouse, when they heard about the victory and the details of the victories, they said, yeah, another victory like this, and we'll ruin the British Army. We'll lose the British Army. So that's kind of, in just a little sentence, that kind of sums up what a Pyrrhic victory is.
Okay.
So after go ahead.
I was just going to say, George Washington and his army, that's really how they won the Revolutionary War, was a variety of these Pyrrhic victories, correct?
That's exactly right. And you know, that this is one of the things what we see, that Greene was so good at listening to George Washington and learning from the things that George Washington did. And, you know, he has that famous saying that we had said the last two shows, that, you know, he won the whole war down south without winning a single battle victory, you know, and his famous saying was, we fight, we get beat, we get up, we rise, and we fight again. And and that's the way he looked at it. You know, he wanted to preserve, and his troops really appreciated the way he did that too, because they were never unnecessarily put at risk, because he wanted to, quote unquote, win the battle, you know, and put that by his name. And he was a very humble man, General Greene was, and he thought more about his soldiers, just as Morgan did, than about the victories. You know, he'd rather inflict damage and then move away before he had the damage. And I told you about last month that the Guilford Courthouse, that Cornwallis was so incensed at winning the victory that he actually fired his cannon, the grape shot, into his own forces that were in a melee with the American forces. And
unbelievable. And
that's when Greene said, "Oh no, I'm out of here. You know, I don't have to stick around. You're doing enough damage for both of us." Mm-hmm. So anyway, after that Pyrrhic victory at Guilford Courthouse, that was on 15 March 1781, then Cornwallis had this long, month-long agonizing march to Wilmington, North Carolina. His sick, wounded, ragged, weary forces were just a shell of their former self and certainly not combat ready anymore. Mercifully, the British Navy met them at the shore and resupplies them with soldiers, food, clothing, necessities, and re-equips them with weapons. You know, a lot of their weapons were destroyed, and in ammunition and uniforms and other, like shoes and other military materiel, and provides medical care and evacuation for some of his sick, injured, and wounded soldiers who were with him. And after some time for rest and recuperation, they're on the shore, during which he he, meaning Cornwallis, can fully consider his situation and decide upon his next moves. And the one fatal decision he makes after all this and regrets for the rest of his life is abandoning his plan to completely conquer the Carolinas before moving north into Virginia, which he had long considered the key to victory in America. And during this long and arduous trek from Guilford Courthouse to his current location on the shore in Wilmington, he was very thankful that General Greene decided to stop shadowing and harassing them. But little did he know at that time that Greene would take his forces back into South Carolina and destroy the British forts and strongholds in the interior and eventually force the English forces there to abandon their prized seaports in Savannah and Charleston by the end of 1782. And so on 12 May 1781, Cornwallis enters Virginia, where he is relieved to no longer be facing Nathanael Greene's forces. But he soon finds out that the forces commanded by Generals Lafayette and General Mad Anthony Wayne and General Van Steuben are worthy adversaries, equally dangerous and equally capable of maintaining high levels of harassment. And he certainly does not know that in a few months, General Washington and French General Rochambeau will be secretly leading a large combined force from the north into Virginia, nor that a strong French naval force commanded by French Admiral de Grasse will arrive off of Chesapeake Bay about the same time as a combined ground forces reaches location now in Yorktown, Virginia.
So, Ben, before we get a little further into this, explain how we got the French to come and help us. Was that Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and their negotiating skills, or how did that happen?
Well, Thomas Jefferson will replace Benjamin Franklin in the years to come, but not now. He's not over there. He's still back in America right now.
But
it's Benjamin Franklin, and it's, you know, he goes over there, and he's like a rock star over there. Everybody has heard about all of the different inventions he has, and they're, you know, and he's just got this wonderful personality, and he loves people, and he understands people really well. And so, yeah, he's the guy that is the great person to do that. In fact, when the Congress sends John Adams over to help him, he writes letters back to Congress and says, please separate us. You know, he said, he's not helping me at all. You know, the French really like to have things done in a smooth, easy way. And he said, Adams really isn't helping the situation at all. So by early September of 1781, Cornwallis finds the Navy under Admiral de Grasse in control of the waters in and around Chesapeake Bay, and they have blocked any assistance or escape he can seek from the sea. And so on 28 September, the Allied French and American forces of Washington, Rochambeau, Wayne, von Steuben, and Lafayette had surrounded him around Yorktown so there would be no relief escape by either land or sea then. And so early October, the Allied siege begins. And by 19 October, Cornwallis is forced to surrender his entire army. And just in case you are wondering, he does not personally surrender and offer his sword, as is customary, but instead claim to be sick. And he sent Brigadier General Charles O'Hara out to conduct the surrender in his stead. And O'Hara first offered his sword to the French General Rochambeau. I think that was an insult to George Washington, and it was an intended insult. But Rochambeau politely directed him to General Washington. He refused to take the sword. And the ever magnanimous General Washington added a little more injury to Cornwallis's ignominy via O'Hara by giving the honor of accepting the British surrender to his second in command, General Benjamin Lincoln, who in May of 1780, if you remember, had said to surrender 5,000 American soldiers in the city seaport of Charleston to the British. And so on 23 October, British loyalists depart Virginia on the British ship Bonetta. And on 25 October, General Clinton's relief forces finally arrive on Chesapeake, and they find that it's a little too late. And so General Cornwallis then leaves Virginia on the British ship Cochrane and arrives in New York City on 19 November. So that is the first part of the presentation we're doing today that we're talking about this. And the second one is Washington after he leaves the Yorktown in Virginia and he brings the army back. He has to bring it back and keep it close to New York City to watch the forces there under Clinton that are there.
Okay.
And Clinton is going to resign and be replaced also is a sink. And so, okay. So,
yeah, I think, yeah, let's go to break. I'm talking with Ben Martin. You know him. He's a patriotic historian, graduate from West Point, former Army Ranger. And we're talking about our American Revolutionary War. And this show is brought to you by the Harris family, who I greatly appreciate that. And I get to work with a lot of great sponsors.
And another one of my great partners is Karen Levine. You know her. She's an award-winning realtor with RE/MAX Alliance. And she and I have been friends for many, many years. She's a great sponsor of both the shows, The Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. Karen, I cannot believe that we are at the end of 2021. 2022 is on the horizon. And it just seems like time is going so quickly.
Well, I think they warned us when we were youthful that time just gets faster and faster. But I've noticed our youth is commenting that life is moving very fast. So I think that we just need to make each day super important and relevant and make sure that we tell those we love that we love them and make sure that we have purpose and intention because days slip by faster than you realize.
Well, what is it? There's that old saying that every day is a gift. That's why they call it the present.
Exactly. And hopefully people have realized, honored, and reflected on that as we kind of come to an end of another year and get ready to start a new one.
Well, there's opportunity, challenges, all kinds of things in 2022. And we will be here in both America's Veteran Stories as well as the Kim Munson Show, Searching for Truth and Clarity. And you are such an integral part of this. And Karen Levine, I know it's challenging out there, trying to get people into homes, selling their homes, but you are able to do that successfully in this crazy real estate market. And I just wish you, all kinds of success and happiness and joy and prosperity and peace in 2022. And I'm excited for what we'll be doing together next year.
Well, I'm looking forward to the work that you're doing and the truths that you're able to reveal and the conversations that we'll be able to have. We look forward to the real estate market. Yes, will continue to be challenging, but we will be able to help people get into homes, experience home ownership, and I'll continue to work to protect private property rights both at a local, state, and national level through the Realtor Association involvement that I am in. And so, you know, we have work to do. We have opportunities ahead of us because we're Americans. So I'm looking forward to 2022. 2021 has been a blessing. A lot of hard work has been put into it, but the benefits, the rewards have been great. And for me, the most, I think, rewarding thing is the relationships that I have been able to build with my clientele and the people I work with and the industry itself. Real estate is an important foundation in the American dream, and I'm just grateful to be a part of that.
Well, you're an integral part of that, as you mentioned, on the local, the state. Well, I'd say local, county, state, and national level, and I so appreciate that. Karen Levine, I wish you a very happy new year. And to reach her, her phone number is 303-877-7516, 303-877-7516. Karen Levine, we'll talk to you in the new year.
That sounds like a plan.
Okay.
And happy Happy New Year to everyone there at the Kim Munson Show.
Well, thanks, Karen, and we'll be right back with Ben Martin.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. You know, we talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom all the time. And that is what the American Revolution was really about. Please, this show is brought to you by the Harris family. Thank you so much to them. And also another great sponsor of the show is Kirsch Insurance Group. And they are specialists in the Medicare arena. They're a broker, so that means they work with a lot of different companies. And beginning January 1, those of you that are on a Medicare Advantage plan, you can have a one-time chance to make a change. And so check out Marlon and Danielle and the whole team over there at Kirsch Insurance Group. They can help you to get your plan just right for you. Their website is iKirsch, that's I-K-I-R-S-C-H. .com. That's iKirsch.com. On the line with us is Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, and graduate of West Point. We're talking about our American history, the Revolutionary War. And so Cornwallis has had to surrender. Then what happens with George Washington, Ben Martin?
Well, after the Battle of Yorktown, where, like you said, he's forced to unconditionally surrender, George Washington moves the Continental Army back into the vicinity of West Point, New York, to keep a close watch on the large British force still under the command now of Sir Guy Carleton that is still stationed in New York City. And the American Army headquarters was located in New Windsor, New York, which is just a few miles north of West Point, and it's around the city of Newburgh, New York. And it still has a great park there, and you can still see the buildings where a lot of what I'm going to talk about now happens. And they're there, and it's a wonderful place to visit when you're up in that area. So during this waiting period, now you know we're into the 1783, and we're approaching March, and so there's been about 18 months. And during that long period, after the fighting has stopped, but before the Treaty of Paris was signed, the Continental Army grew considerably restless, wanting to get back to their homes and families, as everybody would think, and to reestablish their businesses or their farms. But they could not leave as long as the British kept such a sizable force in New York City. And to make matters worse, the army had not been paid. The Congress was bankrupt, and some of the more unscrupulous members were considering ways of not paying the army for past wages nor for the retirement pay that they had been promised if they fought in the war. So a conspiracy began to develop there, and some of the disgruntled
there were some corrupt politicians back then.
Correct. Oh, God, yes, you know. And they were pushing these things forward, and the most corrupt, I think one of the most corrupt people, considering where he was and what his position had been, was General Gates, you know, who has already proven himself mm-hmm. time and again that he really wasn't capable of being a field general. And he was always undermining Washington to the Congress. And so he was playing along with that. And so they sent out a message to foment all of this dissatisfaction. And they were going to have a meeting on 10 March of 1783. Washington found out about this illicit meeting and this illicit scheme, and so he made plans, and so he stopped the meeting. He said, no, you can't have the meeting then.
But yeah, and set this up just a little bit more, because when I first heard this, it was just astounding. So this is, you have officers in the Continental Army, and the Continental Army is restless because they haven't been paid. There are those back in Congress that are saying they're not going to pay them. Well, you can imagine. And so they're having a meeting and they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. That's the setup on this, isn't it, Ben?
You're exactly right. And one of their plans was they were going to all move the army out west and leave the colonies and everybody defenseless. You know, and that didn't make any sense at all. But Washington knew about this, so he canceled that meeting on the 10th, and he said, you can have it on Saturday, the 15th of March. He said, and I won't be here, so, you know, it's okay. So he kind of set them up for this happening, you know, so that they, we've got clear sailing here. And so on 15 March, General Gates is running the meeting, of course. He called the meeting to order, and the place was packed. And the place where they met was called the Hall of Virtue. And that's what they had named the meeting place, the Hall of Virtue. And they were stunned to see Washington walk in and ask permission to speak. You know, he had already become what he was going to be, the greatest American. And Washington then began to speak from the remarks he had prepared for the occasion. His words were short but impassioned, beautifully inspiring, and went straight to the heart of the matter. And this is known as his Newburg Address, and it was 15 March. And in essence, what Washington made three major points in his address. First, he said, we are the servants of the country and its civil government. Two, as I have been for 7+ years in the quest for your just pay, I am your servant. And three, do not tarnish your honor and your glorious example that you have thus far set. And so it's a pretty moving speech, and I can go through all the stuff, but let me just give you an essence of the part. He says, if you would do what you're planning on doing, he said, you would lessen the dignity and sully the glory you have hitherto maintained. He said, in so doing, you will give one more distinguished proof. He said, if you abstain from doing this, you will give one more distinguished proof of the unexampled patriotism and patient virtue, and you will, by the dignity of your conduct, afford occasion of posterity to say, when speaking of the glorious example you have exhibited to mankind, had this day been warming, the world had never seen the last stage of perfection to which human nature is capable of attaining. And, and that was pretty amazing what he said there. And then to kind of set the thing together, after he had done that, the place was stunned. And so then he did this other thing that he did. He said, I'm going to read a letter from a congressman to assure you that they're working really hard to get your pay. And he read it. He said, uncharacteristically, he began to stutter and stammer. He then, with these words, withdrew reading glasses from his coat. Nobody in the Army, except for his close people that were his administrative, his aides, knew that he was using reading glasses. Then he said, gentlemen, you will permit me to put on my spectacles, for I have not only grown gray, but almost blind in the service of my country. And as he read the letter, there were unlistening ears there. So many people were in tears from the recollection and emotion which flooded their memories. And so the rebellion ended on that day, 15 March 1783, and never brought back up again. And so then we go to the Treaty of Paris, when the British forces evacuation day on 25 November 1783. Now, this is several months after that little escapade out there in New Windsor. And on evacuation day, which is what it's called that day, 25 November 1783, following the devastating Battle of Long Island on 27 August 1776, which we talked about earlier in the year, General Washington and the Army retreated across the East River and the benefit of miraculous fog. You remember about all that,
right.
and that they were done that. And so in a series of battles, they were forced out of New York. By 15 November of 1776, we talked about that. And for the remainder of the American Revolutionary War, much of what is now Greater New York City was under British control. In mid-August of 1783, General Carleton, the British sink now, passed. He got word from his superiors in London that it was time to evacuate New York City. But Carleton did not evacuate completely until 25 November 1783. That's quite a long time. And following the departure of the British, the city was secured by American troops under the command of who we all know, General Henry Knox. And after 7 years of the retreat from Manhattan, General Washington and New York Governor George Clinton reclaimed Fort Washington on the northwest corner of Manhattan, and then led the Continental Army in a triumphal procession march down Broadway. You know, Broadway goes way all the way up to the end of the island and beyond. And this great grand parade down there to the New York Battery, and at Cape's Tavern at almost the end of the thing, a citizen address to Washington was read aloud, and it said, "Permit us to welcome you to the city, long torn from us by the hard hand of oppression, but now by your wisdom and energy, under the guidance of Providence, once more the seat of peace and freedom." And then Washington thanked the crowd for their affectionate address, responding this way. And he said, "The fortitude and preservation which you and your suffering brethren have exhibited in the course of this war have not only endeared you to your countrymen, but will be remembered with admiration and applause to the latest posterity." And I wish that was really true. I wish we could think about this. And that's what hopefully presentations like this will help us remember the grand things that have happened in our past here. And so then he gave Governor Clinton gave 13 toasts. And these 13 toasts were known at this time. They were going around, so most people knew them. Some of them were a toast, of course, to the United States of America, to His Most Christian Majesty, the American Army, the memories of those heroes who have fallen for our freedom, and also for our country, be grateful for their military children, and may justice support what courage has gained. I mean, so he goes through all 13 of them there. And then at the end, he comes back, that's 25 November, and then he has done all the things he needs to do, and he has to say his final farewell to his officers, and he does that at Francis Tavern on 4 December 1781. 83, I'm sorry. Is this a good time, a good break, or do we want...
Yeah, I think that it is. Just a couple of things, though. Wanted to mention this. First of all, the 13 different toasts, and we've got a little bit of time, and I remember Liberty Toastmasters, you had explained to us how they did those toasts, and so we've got just a little bit of time to do that. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, when the person that proposed the toast, and everybody had, you know, had a certain part, but this one, Clinton, he just read them all off. And what would normally happen, like for the first one, to the, you know, we'd say, "I propose a toast to the United States of America." And then everybody else who's in the audience, especially if you're at a dinner or something like that, would then raise their glasses and say, "To America," or to his, then the second toast would be, "To His Most Christian Majesty." And then they would say, that would be a simple one where they would just kind of repeat it. They would repeat the toast and say, "To His Most Christian Majesty." And then they would go down, "The American Army." And then they would try to cut that off and say, "To the Army." Just those kind of things were the way that they would echo the toasts that were offered that way. And they went through the whole 13 of them. You know, he would give the long sentence of the toast, and then they would take the most poignant portion of that and repeat it in the echo. So that's the way those toasts were offered and responded.
Well, and I used to go to New York on a pretty regular basis, and I just happened upon Frances. Is that how you say it, Frances Tavern?
Frances, yeah, yes.
And I never, at that time, I didn't understand what it was, and that whole street is extremely historic. And I didn't realize where I was exactly in our history at that time. But we're talking with Ben Martin. The show is brought to you by the Harris family. Thank you for that. We're talking about our American Revolution and our war for independence. And we're going to go to break and continue on as we complete this series for the year. We'll be right back.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
His truth is
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. And one of our great supporters is the Harris family. And they have brought this series to you this year with Ben Martin about our independence, our American Revolutionary War. So appreciate their friendship and their support. Another great sponsor of the show is Castlegate Knife and Tool, family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. Hal and Linnea Van Herke are truly entrepreneurs. And they do have a pop-up shop over at the Castle Rock Mercantile. And of course, they've got a great website as well. And whether or not you're a veteran or a military first responder, they do offer a discount every day, all day long at Castlegate Knife and Tools. So check out their website. That is castlegate.com, castlegate.com. And I'm almost sad, Ben Martin. This is the final segment of this whole series that we've done this year on our American Revolution. And it's all really about George Washington now.
Right. And it gives us something to celebrate. So we have to be happy about this, even though it's coming to the end. I agree with you, Kim. So let's
But we're going to have a great year planned next year, too.
We sure, hopefully, we will, yes. So a week after we have this evacuation on the 25th of November, and that's a date that, you know, many New Yorkers still recognize, you know, this thing. So a week later, on 4 December at Frances Tavern at Pearl and Broad Streets, General Washington met with his officers for the last time to formally say farewell. And the officers were all assembled in the long room upstairs at noontime. And a few moments later, George Washington enters the room, and his emotions are so strong that to be concealed would seem to be reciprocated by every officer present. And after partaking of a slight refreshment, in other words, taking a glass and drinking, in almost breathless silence, the general filled his glass with wine, and turning to the officers, he said, you know, this was his toast. He says, "With a heart full of love and gratitude, I now take leave of you. I most devoutly wish that your latter days will be as prosperous and happy as your former ones have been glorious and honorable." And he said, and then after the officers drank some wine, General Washington spoke again. "I cannot come to each of you, but shall feel obliged if each of you will come and take me by the hand." And of course, General Knox, who we've known about and we've talked about throughout all of this series, he's being nearest to him, turned to the commander-in-chief, who, suffused in tears, was incapable of utterance, but grasped his hand and they embraced each other in silence. And in the same affectionate manner, every officer in the room marched up and parted with the general-in-chief. And so such a scene of sorrow and weeping, this is what one witness said, such a scene of sorrow and weeping I have never before witnessed. And he said, and finally hope I may never be called to witness it again. So who was that witness, Washington said, could imagine that the most violent local prejudices would cease so soon, and that men who came from different parts of the continent, strongly disposed by the habits of education to despise and quarrel with each other, would instantly become one patriotic band of brothers. And Washington then walked across the room, raised his arm in a final farewell, and silently strode out of the tavern. And according to a French officer who had served under Washington, he said Washington was a foe to ostentation and vainglory, who did not seem to estimate himself at his true worth. The officers escorted General Washington from the tavern to the Whitehall Wharf, where he boarded a barge that took him to Paulus Hook, now New Jersey City, in New Jersey. Washington would continue to Annapolis, where the Continental Congress was meeting then, and George Washington would complete his last duty as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. And so he gets there.
And I just wanted to interject something here.
Yes.
And that is I've seen it in sports, but I'm not sure that that's the greatest analogy, but I've seen it in sports when there's been a team that has come to work together and they've had adversity and they have actually been successful and won a championship or won that really difficult game. And what you're talking about, and it doesn't compare with what Washington and his officers has gone through, but can you imagine those hugs when they think about the Battle of Brooklyn, where they were able to escape because of the fog that came in, or now I'm drawing a blank. Henry Knox that brought the cannons from Ticonderoga. I mean, can you just imagine all of the emotion that was going on in that those hugs that they had as they were saying goodbye?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is just unbelievable. I mean, it's overwhelming to think about that. And to think about the time they spent in Morristown or the time they spent in Valley Forge where they suffered and were freezing and didn't have clothes and walked in the snow and left blood trails in the snow. I mean, they went through a lot of hardships to get where they were and to end it with this great victory. And so, I don't know of any sports contest that lasts 7+ years. So,
right, and loss of life also. So I know that probably, but I was just trying to think about the emotion that happens during that. So Washington goes to Annapolis. What happens after that?
Yeah, well, he goes there, and it's like, it's 3 weeks later. It's now 23 December, and, he's anxious to get home and see Martha and to see his home again at Mount Vernon. And so he gets there, and they have a formal thing where Washington, before this all starts, he has already written out his resignation and given it to the president, who is Thomas Milton. And as you know, he was one of the people that was involved in the cabal, the Conway cabal, to get him out of office, to get George Washington out of being sink and replace him with Gates. What terrible occurrence would have happened at that. So he is
so, and just clarifying, he is president. Oh, you just said it, president of Congress. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, he's president of the Congress. And so, but Washington is magnanimous and he's above that and he does what he should do professionally. And so he does that. They look at it, they consult themselves and everything like that, and they have to approve of his resignation. And so he gives them time to look it over, and then he comes and his words that he sends to Congress when he does this formally. And at that time that he does it formally, the place is packed with all the delegates, but in the gallery above, it's full of all the people that have come there, women and men, to listen to this, because Washington is, you know, he's such a figure by then that everybody wants to be with him as much as they can. And so he says, "Mr. President, the great events on which my resignation depended, having at length taken place," in other words, we've won the war, "I have now the honor of offering my sincere congratulations to Congress and of presenting myself before them to surrender into their hands the trust committed to me and to claim the indulgence of retiring from the service of my country. Happy in the confirmation of our independence and sovereignty and pleased with the opportunity afforded the United States of America in becoming a respectable nation, I resign with satisfaction at the appointment I accepted with diffidence, a diffidence in my abilities to accomplish so arduous a task, which, however, was superseded by a confidence in the rectitude of our cause, the support of the supreme power of the Union, and the patronage of heaven." I'm sorry about that. "The successful termination of the war has verified the most sanguine expectations and my gratitude for the interposition of Providence, and the assistance I have received from my countrymen increases with every review of the momentous contest." And you can see right there in just that little short passage, he has given praise to God and thanks to God three times. So it's pretty amazing. And he said, "Now, having now finished the work assigned me, I retire from the great theater of action, and bidding an affectionate farewell to this august body, under whose orders I have so long acted, I hereby offer my commission and take my leave of all the employments of public life." And so he does that. And he does it like he does everything else, you know, very magnanimously and very nobly. And so with that, you know, we in America at the time, all of the Americans are really in love with George Washington and all he has done for the country and all that he has suffered. You know, he had a life of privilege. He didn't really have to do this, but he went through all of it. And so we have this painter named Benjamin West. He's an American painter, and he's back in England, and he's painting portraits of all the British people at the time. They're the famous British people, and he's painting King George. And while he's completing a famous portrait of King George in 1783, when George asked him, he says, "What do you think General Washington will do now that the war is ending?" And Benjamin West says, "Your Majesty, I have heard that General Washington has resigned his commission and has returned to his farm." And King George was nonplussed, and after a pronounced silence said, "If he does that, he will be the greatest man on earth." And that's a tribute given to him by his enemy. And there another Englishman, Lord Byron, has this poem. Lord Byron, for most of his life and most of Bonaparte's reign, has just regaled in him and just thought he was the best thing that could ever happen to humanity. And then at the end, as he gets to the end of his reign and his conquest, he finds out that Napoleon Bonaparte is also overcome with those human imperfections of ambition and avarice. And so he writes this epic poem, and then he ends it with this one sentence, with this one stanza, and it's another great tribute to our father of our country, George Washington. And if you'll permit me, I'd like to give that to the audience now.
Please, yes.
It says, "Where may the weary eye repose when gazing on the great, where neither guilty glory glows nor despicable state? Yes, one, the first, the last, the best. The Cincinnatus of the West, whom envy dare not hate, bequeathed the name Washington to make men blush. There was but one. And that's it.
Ben, I many times say, particularly with our American Veterans Story show, that we stand on the shoulders of giants. And this has been such an important series because you have brought these men and women to life and realized that this was, as you mentioned, it was 7 years, 7 years. And Washington, my understanding is all he really wanted to do was be at Mount Vernon and farm. That, I mean, he loved that. Yeah. And instead, he fought a war against the most powerful empire on the face of the earth at that time. And then he goes on to come back and serve as our first president. And this idea that in America today, we're not teaching this history to our children and not giving the whole story, only focusing on the faults of our founders instead of the whole big picture. I so appreciate what you do. I appreciate all that you teach us, and I'm just really honored to get to do this. Now, do you want to do a teaser for what we might be doing next year?
Well, I would like, you know, since I think that we have all, you know, we have so many great people, and, you know, every society needs heroes. They need people to look up to. And for the last, I don't know how many years now, we've been trying to tear those heroes apart and find, like you said, concentrate on all of their faults and not any of their great characteristics. And so I would like to, if we have the chance to next year, Lord willing and the creek don't rise, I would like to introduce and tell a little bit about some of those great people to the public so that they know them too and can respect them.
Well, I'm excited about that, and 2022 is right around the corner. Ben Martin, I so appreciate you. I wish you and yours a very prosperous 2022, and thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you very much, too, Kim. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the Harris family, too, and their support, because this is great, and this is a story that needs to be told and needs to be remembered by all of us.
Well, most definitely. So, Ben Martin, thank you so much. And our quote for the show, at the end of the show, is by George Washington. He said, "Be Americans. Let there be no sectionalism, no North, South, East, or West. You are all dependent on one another and should be one in union. In one word, be a nation. Be Americans and be true to yourselves." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.